This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Use code GRACE to receive $10 off plus free shipping. Go to EdenPure.com to order today. Enjoy the podcast.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I have often said for a long time, I say to people, thank God for Molly Hemingway and Sean Davis and people from the Federalist, because they're on Twitter and they call out double standards and they call out hypocrisy, and it makes me feel better because I don't have to be on guard trying to prove these things in my own mind. I just see it on Twitter. I go, oh, cool. At least someone's noticing it and calling it out. That's becoming less and less likely as the censorship continues on Twitter, and now people from Yahoo News are calling for Molly Hemingway to be banned, and the Federalist seems to be really getting under people's skin. I think part of the reason is because their contributors make such great points and such great arguments. They're not based on emotion. They're based on fact. And one of those contributors is with us today. Thank you so much for joining me, Emily Jasinski. I'm so excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So Emily is the culture editor at The Federalist. And Emily, you wrote a piece and it was titled, "To Heal, We Must First Acknowledge Plummeting Public Trust is Reasonable." Could you explain to the listeners here your take on Americans and their current distrust of the media and politicians?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my own distrust of the media and politicians is why I, as someone who grew up in Wisconsin, came out here to Washington, D.C., because I was so like deeply affected and frustrated by it. And it's one of the things that motivated me. Actually, it was really the central thing that motivated me personally to come out here. And so last week, as I was covering the rally that then sort of turned into, unfortunately, the riot, I had met so many people who were, you know, reminded me of all the folks that, you know, in my family, people I grew up with. Literally, I talked to one woman who's from the same small corner of Wisconsin as me. And the thing that I heard most from everybody is that they just don't know who to trust anymore. So they trust Donald Trump. And I don't blame a single person for feeling that way or believing that, because everybody has lied to us. You know, they lied to us about Russiagate. They have lied to us time and again about everything important going on in our society and in our culture. They've been wrong about it. Our scientific institutions are lying to us about biological sex and gender. Our academics are lying to us about what constitutes racism, sexism. And so conservatives or people who are even in the middle, you know, they're being called racist and sexist if they do something like, you know, God forbid, vote for Donald Trump because, you know, they like his policy agenda. So I think there's just this very, very deep frustration. I have it myself. I sensed it in the crowd very deeply on last Wednesday. And so I think, you know, it's an important thing also to look across. I covered a lot of the riots in D.C. from BLM and Antifa this summer as well. And again, these people, just like the rest of us, their conduct is egregious and disgusting, but they're also being lied to by the media. And I don't think the media truly understands, the corporate media truly understands the extent to which their malfeasance and their terrible coverage has stoked institutional distrust in this country. And that's something I've sensed as I've covered these demonstrations and as I've covered the folks that come out here for rallies and everything. And I just don't think we're equipped to deal with it. So I guess the point of the piece was just to say the first step towards any of this is just to say, listen, we know that you distrust everyone. We know that's why you, a normal, you know, PTA mom, and I literally saw this, you know, joined in the group that's trying to get inside the Capitol because you don't trust anybody. And you know what? It's reasonable not to trust anybody at this point because they all lied to you.
Now, Emily, the other thing I want to talk about, though, is that there seems to be a real lack of self-reflection from that media and from those politicians. I thought in 2016 that that was going to be the elitist, you know, wake up call that, listen, maybe you have these people wrong. Maybe it's not just crazy racists who support Donald Trump. Maybe you're painting with a broad brush. But it seems like as time goes on and as more news stories break, they get more, you know, stubborn in the idea that we are all, you know, credulous boomer rubes who don't deserve any sort of respect or any sort of understanding. And that's why I really liked your piece, because you talked about the importance of understanding people that you might not necessarily agree with.
I love a couple of things that you just said there so much. First of all, the credulous boomer rubes reference came from Rick Wilson on CNN with Don Lemon. And that's just a perfect example of the condescension that goes towards anybody. And that happened literally 3 years after Donald Trump was elected. He went on CNN, and I just thought at the time, this is the perfect representation of the elite arc post-Trump. Because like you, I had that exact same hope, cautious optimism in the days after Trump won in 2016, because the media had this fleeting moment of self-reflection. The executive editor of the New York Times, Dean Baquet, said, you know, we don't get religion and we need to do a better job of understanding people around the country. And actually what's happened is they've gone in the opposite direction, so that 3 years later, you have somebody who refers to himself as an anchor on one of the major cable news networks, laughing along with Rick Wilson's credulous boomer rubes line. And it was just this disgusting, grotesque pile on of not Donald Trump, but his supporters. And so I think it's exactly right. And I think a huge part of the problem here is that this isn't like this is happening in the context of everything that was percolating in academia for decades, identity politics and sexual revolution. It hit a point of critical mass with people my age, millennials, who are now in the newsrooms of these major publications. They are out of the classrooms. They're now in the boardrooms. They're in the writers' rooms of Hollywood. And that's why this sort of that's why they've gone in the opposite direction over the course of the Trump administration. And instead of saying, listen, we need to think maybe we went too far in our definitions of racism and sexism that implicate decent everyday people, they went in the opposite direction. And they said, actually, we're not even being narrow enough. You know,
right.
We actually need to get even more skeptical of everyday average people. And that's where we are. And it's a really sort of sad state of affairs.
I'm talking to Emily. I'm sorry, Emily. I don't know why I struggle with that last name. Jasinski or Jasinski. Say it for everyone so they can know what it is.
It's Jasinski, but I'm not at all sensitive about the pronunciation because it's impossible.
Okay, perfect. But you also wrote another piece that I loved, and I think it really ties into what we're talking about. You wrote a piece about how the people who are going to be hurt from this riot are the people who are already hurting the most. And something really interesting happened. But first, I want to quote part of your article. You said the Capitol riot will hurt the people who are already hurting most, the decent rallygoers at a loss for answers, continually ignored and smeared, saddled with the baggage of violence they did not commit. Now, it was a great piece. I read it. I think I read it last week on the show. And then a person, his name is Jason Wilson from The Guardian, he saw your piece and he thought it was worth criticizing because you didn't cite that all Trump supporters are racist and bigots, and you wrote a reply to that. Emily, why did you think Jason's attacks on your piece warranted a rebuttal?
Yeah, I think they warranted a rebuttal because it's the perfect representation of, I think, the broader corporate media's rebuttal to the point that we need to, the political establishment, the political class needs to pause and understand the 74 million people who went into voting booths this fall and voted for Donald Trump. And the rebuttal to that is my statement about the forgotten people, as he sort of mocked, did not include any mention that academic studies show Trump supporters are primarily animated by racism and sexism. And so I wrote a piece saying, well, I refuse to accept that premise, and everybody should refuse to accept that premise because it's based on these really faulty studies that do the same thing academia has been doing for at least a decade now, where they define racism and sexism as anything that is opposed to progressivism.
Right.
So if you are slightly to the right of Noam Chomsky, you are a racist and a sexist. There's this like embedded notion on the left that anybody who supports Donald Trump is animated by racism and sexism, and that is backed up by peer-reviewed studies that are terrible. And this is the perfect example of why nobody trusts our institutions. They don't trust academia because it's producing this nonsense research. They don't trust the media because the media is parroting it uncritically. And it's just a perfect example. So I felt it warranted a rebuttal for those reasons.
And if anyone wants to check out that rebuttal, it was fabulous. It's at thefederalist.com. But Emily, I also want to ask you, so I mentioned this when I started this interview, that I love all of the writers at The Federalist. I love everyone's tweets. I follow you on Twitter. I think you guys do a great job of, and some people say it's whataboutism, but I think it's just calling out double standards, which is critical. But now it seems like big tech is really trying to deplatform a lot of people, not just Donald Trump. How are you guys responding to that? How are people like you and Sean Davis and Molly Hemingway, how are you going to get your voices heard if you can't? I mean, we had this idea that, well, we'll have our own app, Parler, and now that's being deplatformed and they're not going to allow Parler to exist. Are you guys having a conversation about, you know, the future and what that means for a lot of conservative columnists?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're having this conversation in our pages, as our readers can see. And this is essentially, this proves everything that we have been warning about. This is just, and it's not just us. I mean, I'm sure your listeners and you and everyone around the country saw this coming. And, you know, people get mocked for making the slippery slope argument, but this has just come to fruition. We've seen it happen. And so this is proof of, you know, everything that we've anticipated, everything we've warned about. And I think, you know, we're not quite at the worst case scenario yet, but it seems as though that may, in fact, be imminent. And so, yes, of course, we've been prepared for this for, you know, months, at least, you know, since things became really clear earlier this year that we were headed into a very dangerous place very quickly. And so, yeah, I mean, this is completely what we expected, and we're going to, you know, continue using every resource that exists to advance our message and to stand up for, you know, our audience, people who have literally no representation in the media. The left likes to talk about representation a lot. They talk about it in terms of race and gender and sexual orientation, but they never talk about it in terms of class. They never talk about it in terms of ideology. And a huge part of what we do is give people representation in the media who don't have a voice. And so we're going to continue using every available resource that exists to do that. And that might mean we have to try new resources and focus less on old ones, but we're going to use everything out there to keep doing what we do.
Emily, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you? I mean, I feel ironic even saying this now. Where can people find you on Twitter before you're thrown off like the rest of us?
My Twitter account is just my name. So it's at Emily Jashinsky.
All right.
And you can find us at The Federalist at FDRLST.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Emily. I hope you join us again. We love having you. And that was a great interview. It's so nice to hear people talk about this. And the reason I love some of these conservative sites is people don't get so emotional. Like when you have a liberal on, they start screaming at you. People just go based off, you know, this is the facts. And it is a slippery slope. I'm sure I'll be mocked for saying that. But I think a lot of people are starting to think, maybe people are onto something with this. And for people who aren't scared about it, and for people who, you know, like a lot of these people, Jim Acosta from CNN, who are saying, oh, Trump's kneecapped now, as if it's something to celebrate. You want to talk about wrong side of history. You are definitely on the wrong side of history with this one. Guys, who says there is no such thing as a free lunch? Not me. That's because with my friends at Aviva Trattoria, we'll be giving away a free lunch every other Friday here at the studio. We did it this past Friday. It's so much fun. Two lucky listeners will have an incredible meal by Aviva and watch the show with me in studio. All you have to do to enter is go to gracecurlyshow.com. You can also find a lot of stuff on that site. Columns, podcasts, everything you need. Sign up. It will drop down. It's a Dropbox. Put your email in. You don't have to buy anything. All you're doing is entering your email and you will be part of the contest. I will be selecting I already selected the first winners this past Friday. So they'll be coming in, I think, this week. And when Anthony and Marcy come in, I hope they bring me some more chicken parm and some more, you know, cheese and crackers. And they just bring in the best food. What was the shrimp dish they brought in? Sorry, I can't hear you there.
The seafood risotto.
Yeah. So good. And they also have four convenient locations in Marlboro, Maynard, Wrentham, and Westford. Takeout is available too. They're such great people, such a great company, and such a great restaurant. You guys should definitely check them out. Enter to win the Aviva VIP lunch. Go to gracecurlyshow.com. That's gracecurlyshow.com. When we get back, I'm going to open up the phone lines, 844-500-4242. What do you think of big tech? Are you getting nervous? Do you feel like it's being blown out of proportion? Are you on Parler? Are you going to join Parler? Let us know. We'll be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at G_Curley.